For more than a decade, Saturdays and Illegal Curve have been synonymous with one another, with insight, analysis, and interviews regarding the Winnipeg Jets, the Manitoba Moose, and all around the NHL. Here are Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg, and your host, Drew Mandel. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now.
Good morning, Winnipeg! Good morning, Manitoba! For all those joining us live this morning on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, the triumvirate back together after a week apart. Pleased to welcome everyone on this Saturday morning to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Good morning to you, Nicole. Good morning to everybody in the chat. Join the chat. That's the best way to interact with us throughout the course of the next 2 hours, as we're all about the Winnipeg Jets. We're all about the Stanley Cup playoffs. We're all about having some fun, bringing some sunshine into your lives.
I like fun.
Because there certainly isn't any sunshine outside otherwise. Good to see you, gentlemen. Both job well done holding down the fort without me last week, but nice to be back together with you, if only virtually.
Yeah, I'd like to say that it's good to have you back, Drew, but I'd be lying. But I want to know though, Drew, is it true that you flew out to Ottawa to meet with Barry Trotz and try to convince him to be the next head coach of the Winnipeg Jets by basically offering him a lifetime supply of Bernstein's Deli? People want to know.
That is, well, actually, no, I don't speak on behalf of the Jets. I offered him a lifetime supply of Bernstein's Deli to come join the Illegal Curve Hockey Show and be the permanent host, the lifetime host of the show. I'll depart stage left and Barry Trotz can take over and deal with you yahoos on a weekly and daily basis and sometimes multiple times a day as he inundates us with texts and emails and phone calls and carrier pigeon messages and things of that nature. But yes, that is the case. Me and Barry, we had a good conversation in Ottawa.
In Nashville, though.
In Ottawa via Nashville.
I was going to say, as Darren Dreger reported and as we put on legalcurve.com, the Jets met with Barry Trotz in Nashville.
In Nashville, exactly right. So that's the update.
And if people are wondering why it was in Nashville, I mean, we know that Trotz was the coach in Nashville. I'm assuming it's because Trotz still has a home there.
That would be my assumption as well. It seems like it would be a random place to just meet unless they were hitting up Tootsie's after for a little R&R. But yes, that was the sort of Trotz Watch 2022 news of the week, is that the Jets did have an interview with Barry Trotz earlier this week. It was conducted in Nashville. Now, I think a lot of people were maybe expecting that interview would immediately result in a signed contract.
Who expected that?
I didn't. I had no
expectations. Look, sorry to interrupt you, Drew. I mean, I just saw Sam Carcitti of the Philly Hockey Now, I think, had an article and said, because the report was from our good friend Anthony Sanfilippo, was that the Flyers were supposed to be meeting with Barry Trotz on Friday. I'm not sure if it actually happened on Friday, but they were supposed to be meeting with him next after the Jets. And Sam Carcitti wrote about how, you know, but you were surprised that the Jets didn't sign Barry Trotz. And I thought to myself, like, what's he talking about? Like, I had no, like, if I'm Barry Trotz, why would I sign? It's nobody in their right mind, especially someone who's that coveted, would say, you know what I'm going to do? You're offering me a shiny nickel. I'm going to take that. I mean, you wait and you hear what, if there's
as all the coffee in the world sold. Yeah,
I'll take it. No, I mean, like, so nobody would, if you're thinking about it logically, would think that he was going to sign the first deal that came his way when you knew there's at least reasonably 4 to 6 teams that are going to probably make an offer for his services next year. So, I mean, I had no expectation it was going to be quick. I just thought it was a good sign that he was the Jets were the first interview that he was great, that he gave, but I had no expectation that he was going to sign a contract with Winnipeg.
Boys, I think this should be done bachelor style. Sorry, Drew. I think that at this point, you know, there should be a rose ceremony and they should actually get the guy, you know, that I don't know his name, that little guy that does the rose ceremony. And
Chris Harrison, if I'm not mistaken.
The fact that you know that, Drew, is very disturbing. But
it's also possible Chris Harrison was the guy who used to be the host and then he got booted
because he wasn't woke enough.
Skeletons in his closet or something. No, I don't watch The Bachelor, for the record.
The last season I watched was the one with Colton where he jumped over the fence. And yeah, that was a bit of a dark time for me. I haven't watched it since then. But I think, you know, with, like you said, 6 or 7 teams, I think, you know, that's the way it should probably end. And Barry should just give, like, Chevy a rose at the end of this.
Well, you know, I agree with what you said there, Dave, that, look, we should all have the job opportunities and be as coveted professionally as Barry Trotz currently is. So there is no reason for him to rush into anything. Most, if not all, of these teams are going to gladly wait for him to make a decision. And I don't expect that it's going to be a long, drawn-out decision. I think he's going to take the meetings he wants to take. He's going to do his due diligence. You know, the number is going to be the number. And anybody who thinks the number, you know, that they can get away with lowballing him is just not going to be a real player in this game. It's going to be a number that's, you know, probably could very well start with a six. And that, you know, and if you want to
have, and honestly, Barry Trotz deserves that, Drew.
Yeah. When you've accomplished what you've accomplished in the course of your career, you get to make your, you get to carve your own path forward. You get to dictate, for the most part, what your salary is going to be and where your destination is going to be. It's unrestricted free agency for a head coach, like it is for a player. They get to dictate their future. In this case, Barry Trotz is going to get to dictate his future. The Jets, you know, the question is, do the Jets get scared off by a number at a point in time? And that, I think, is going to be, look, the Jets have deep pockets, so don't kid yourself for a second when, you know, you hear some reports that, you know, Philly has more money to spend than the Jets do, or Vegas or Dallas or any of these teams. The truth is, if you want Barry Trotz as your head coach, all these teams can afford him. That doesn't necessarily mean they're going to pay it. But if you're the True North Sports and Entertainment organization and you think that Barry Trotz is what gets you on the right path again and gets you back to the promised land, well, look, two home games in the playoffs pays for Barry Trotz's yearly salary. So if you think, and I mean, you know, maybe it's three home games, you know what I'm saying? You know, if you think that he's going to get you there and that he's going to get you there better than any other coach in the league or potential coach, then that's the price you're going to have to pay. Now, not my money, so easy for me to say, but it's the money equation. Every team knows what they're going to have to spend to get Barry Trotz.
Yeah, it's going to be at the higher end. Like you said, Drew, could be around, you know, we've heard, you know, reports. I think it was Nick Kyprios that reported it could be around, you know, $6 million. I agree with you. I don't think that's the issue here. I think it's as simple as Barry Trotz is going to, and we all know this, I mean, he's going to pick the team that he feels is the best fit for him, right? Because we all know that, you know, we talked about, you know, Philadelphia and, you know, we hear, you know, Vegas, I don't know if they've set up an interview with Trotz yet, but you would think that, you know, Detroit would also inquire. So he could have
Dallas,
you
know, now.
Dallas, has he?
Rick Bonus.
Well, exactly. That was a little bit surprising as well with Rick Bonus, but yeah, Dallas. So, I mean, there's five teams right there, and we talked about, you know, there could be even another one once the second round is over. Who knows, right?
Hey, so, if you're for the Florida Panthers and you get bounced in by Tampa, you know, and there's reports that Andrew Burnett wants to go up to management anyways, so wouldn't that be interesting?
Well, and that was what I was going to mention, Dave, that, you know, is a little bit different here and speaks more to the kind of idea that money really isn't the issue here. To me, it's, you know, the Jets are looking for someone to come in long-term. I mean, they're not hiring Barry Trotz here for a couple of years. If you're hiring him, and we know that there's a chance that the management role is going to be attached to that, right? Because, you know, at this age, you know, Barry Trotz starts to think about, you know, his future and, you know, 2, 3, 4 years down the road, you know, I want to transition into a management role. So the Jets, the Flyers, the Wings, the Golden Knights, everybody here is looking long-term. This isn't a guy, I mean, that is even more reason why it's surprising that, you know, Lou Lamoriello let him go, because I was under the impression that, you know, Trotz would be the head coach there for another, at least, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years. And then obviously, you know, Lane Lambert takes over for Trotz when we thought they were going to bring in a new voice, but all you're doing is bringing in an old voice that happened to be the assistant under Trotz. So I agree with you, Drew. I think, you know, Trotz is going to pick, you know, the situation, the team that he feels, you know, provides the best future for him and his family. And honestly, you would have to think, you know, the Jets are right at the top of that list.
Well, if you're Barry Trotz, and we've talked about it, and it's been talked about all week, you know, you're interviewing the Jets as much as the Jets are interviewing you, probably more so, to be honest. If you're Barry Trotz, you want to know, if you were to come to Winnipeg, just like any other city, just like Philly or Dallas or Vegas or any any potential destination for him. What are you walking into? Because this Winnipeg Jets team is not just your typical team right now that, you know, is in the market for a new head coach. They're not in the same position, I think, psychologically as an organization as like the Dallas Stars. Dallas Stars made the playoffs, hard-fought series against Calgary, went, you know, took them as further than most people would have thought. You know, you're walking into a, I think, a more settled
situation. Jake Oettinger took them that far.
Yes, absolutely. You're walking into a more settled situation in a city like Dallas than you are in Winnipeg. Winnipeg, we know about the upheaval in that dressing room. It was laid bare for all to see last, you know, at the end of the season press conferences. So if you're Barry Trotz, you're finding out and you're doing your due diligence, you know, what is actually going on in that room. And again, I remind everybody that's watching, look, the NHL is just the worst high school in the world as it pertains to gossip. They know exactly what's going on behind the scenes throughout the league. There's no secrets. It is Gossip Fest 2022 in and around the NHL. So Barry Trotz and every head coach and any potential head coaches are firmly aware of the dynamics in a particular dressing room. So if you're Trotz, you want to find out from Kevin Cheveldayoff and whomever else was in that interview in Nashville, what am I walking into? Am I walking into a salvageable situation, or am I walking into a bit of a disaster? Because it certainly, from all aspects, looks like it's more on the disaster side.
No, it's, and there's a lot of salvageable, Drew. I agree that right now there's a lot that needs to be worked out in the dressing room, but I think we all know that you can turn this around, and Barry Trotz is definitely a guy that can turn it around. We've seen it in New York. We saw it win a cup in Washington. One thing I wanted to mention, Drew, sorry for cutting you off, Rob Somerville, a loyal viewer of IC, was asking about a salary cap for coaches. There isn't, that does not count against the salary cap. There is no salary cap for coaches.
I think
it's only internal.
I know, but I'm wondering if that's what he's wondering. I think his question was, as he, I could be wrong, Rob.
North have an internal salary
cap. I think he was wondering maybe if there's a cap of their own that they have set for the, but we'll see. Hey, Rob, you know what? Answer the question. Let us know what your query was.
You know, Paul Maurice wasn't making chump change as the head coach of the Jets.
Yeah.
You know, what was he making? About $3 million a year, I think I
thought I saw someone say 3.5. So
yeah, well, when he signed that contract extension a few years back, you know, it wasn't on the low end of things. It was a very reasonable salary for a head coach. Now, does True North want to go to the upper echelon? Do they want to go to the, you know, what Mike Babcock made when he first signed in Toronto? Mm-hmm. Maybe they're looking at that as a bit of a cautionary tale that, you know, a head coach is not necessarily, you know, the panacea and doesn't necessarily guarantee success. Because, you know, we saw what happened with Babcock in Toronto. He got them to a point and then it plateaued and then he was no longer the Leafs head coach. I mean, it's a fascinating dynamic. If you're Barry Trotz, I was talking to Anthony. You mentioned Anthony Sanfilippo earlier. He's with crossingbroad.com. He's covered the Flyers for decades. Good friend of ours. I was messaging with him yesterday, and he said, look, Winnipeg offers the job security that probably none of these other teams necessarily offer. You know, Vegas. Well,
when you're talking about Philly, they go through coaches like, you know, you go through Rolexes, Drew.
Exactly. And Vegas, you know, fires a coach. What do they have? They've had four coaches in the 5 years that they've existed, something like that. I mean, you know, they go through coaches very, you know, on a regular basis. So if you want job security and you want, you know, a similar salary, you know, Winnipeg would probably be the place. But the question is, do you want, you know, if you are not confident in your voice being heard in the dressing room, then maybe Winnipeg isn't the place. And I don't know. I'm not saying that he is or he isn't. I'm just saying that is probably, like, he saw how the Jets season ended. He saw the kerfuffle at the end of the season.
Yeah.
Do you want to walk into that kind of situation, or do you want to go to a more stable environment that might not have the same job security, but it's got a guaranteed contract because you're a head coach? Do you, or you know, what is your preference of the two, sort of thing, Dave?
And I think, you know, you hit it on the head, or when you said he's interviewing the Jets as much as the Jets are interviewing him. And I think when you've done what he's been able to do, when you've been able to take a Washington Capitals team that was a perennial contender but never was able to get over that hump. And yeah. then you were able to turn them into what you did. Wasn't a fluke. And then you go to the Islanders and you take the worst defensive or second worst defensive team in the NHL and you turn them into one of the best defensive teams. And they go to the Eastern Conference Finals twice. And they're a goal away from the Stanley Cup Finals. And they probably would have won the Stanley Cup if they would have beaten Tampa. So you've got a guy who was able to do that to an Islanders team that had, you know, offensive guys, guys like, you know, Matt Barzal, who can score like anybody, but, you know, they were able to create a system there in New York. Some people could say it was less than entertaining, but I suspect that winning is the ultimate form of entertainment for most folks. And, you know, the Jets, you could say they're entertaining, but they're not winning. So what does it matter, right? Like, it really doesn't make a difference. You know, ultimately, at the end of the day, you have a guy who, I agree with you, Drew. Like, if you have to put all of these jobs up, you know, against each other, and that's what he's ultimately going to do. He's going to talk to 4 to 6 teams. He's going to look at the money. I'm sure that's for sure going to be a factor, of course. And then he's also going to look at the prospects. What are the prospects? And, you know, I think part of it is also he probably enjoys a challenge, and he knows, I mean, think about a legacy. He's what is he like? I think he's 86 games away from winning 1,000. So as a head coach,
he's the third winningest coach of all time.
Right. And I think, but there's only been one, only Scotty Bowman. I don't think Al Arbor had over 1,000 wins. So I think only Scotty Bowman has over 1,000 wins in the NHL as a head coach. And again, from a legacy perspective, you know, do you want to go to Vegas where there's that turmoil and there's that uncertainty? Do you want to, I mean, again, Winnipeg has its own uncertainty and question marks right now. You know, and then you look at the other teams, right? Detroit, up and coming young talent, you know, maybe not there yet. That's going to be a project for a few years. Does he want that? As you guys just said, Dallas is now an opportunity. And as, you know, pointed out in the comments, close to where his home base is potentially in Nashville. So, you know, and with an exciting young goaltender in Jake Oettinger, you know, that's a good prospect. Now, of course, Dallas is an interesting team because they've got a lot of older guys and they've got some young core. So that's an interesting mix as well. And that's what he's doing. He's evaluating. And that's what anyone does in this situation. And I think that's why when I read they were surprised he didn't sign with Winnipeg, I said, yeah. Why would he do it? It just doesn't make any sense from his point of view because he has to decide, right? Does he want to be here? And what is this going to look like? And I'm sure that was the nature of the conversation more than anything else. Like you know, Kevin Cheveldayoff probably said, if you look at what we've got, what do you think you can do with this team? But I'm sure Barry Trotz's next comment was, well, what are you going to have with this team next year? Because there's uncertainty with Mark Scheifele. There's uncertainty with Pierre-Luc Dubois' long-term future here in Winnipeg. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the rest of the question marks, right? So, you know, and I'm sure he looked at the defense and said, you've got some nice pieces. I'm sure I could work with this. You know, maybe not. You know, like I said, he has to evaluate. That's what he's doing. He's not making a small decision. He's making a decision where he's going to be. And as some of the commenters have said, you know, Winnipeg is job security for a coach generally, right? So he knows that it's not like Vegas. You know, he goes to Vegas and he doesn't get him to the, you know, Western Conference Finals next year, he'd probably be fired. But in Winnipeg, you know, if he falls short of that, it's not that same sort of uncertainty. And again, it's the NHL, your contract guaranteed anyways. But still, you know, you don't want that sort of uncertainty hanging over your head like a guillotine. So I think it's one of those situations where Barry Trotz, like, you know, one of the other questions we had that I highlighted was, well, how long is it going to be? How long will it be? And I agree with what Drew said. I don't think it's going to be something I don't think it'll be imminent because I think he wants to go through the rest of the process. Yeah. But I would imagine that let's put it this way. It won't be the draft and you're still wondering who is going to be the next head. Where is Barry Trotz going
to
be coaching?
Yeah. Don't expect Barry Trotz to sign with the team over the May long weekend. And I would say, use the, you know, example, Dave, like Barry Trotz is like a college graduate that is graduating with like a 4.0 GPA. And all the companies are trying to woo him. Like one company is saying, oh, well,
something you can relate to right there, big boy.
Absolutely. Yeah. I was very much sought after when I graduated from the University of Winnipeg with my
0.4, 4.0. Who's counting? Yeah,
absolutely. Exactly. It was the inverse of 4.0. But, you know, so that's what's happening here. And it's impossible. And it's kind of pointless, guys, for anybody to think that any team really has the advantage. I mean, the Jets, if any team has the advantage because of the fact that the Trotz is, of course, from Manitoba and his dad still lives either. I'm not sure if it's in Dauphin or around Dauphin, but I mean, when you're Trotz and you have the pedigree, like Dave said, You turn the Capitals from a pretender into a Stanley Cup champion, or pardon me, a contender, a team that could never get over the hump. And you had the Islanders, you know, in the conference finals back-to-back years. He's one of the only guys that will instantly have, maybe Gerard Gallant, guys, is in that category as well, where he becomes available and every team, you know, wants him, right? So at this point, like, anytime you hear that Barry Trotz is going to be interviewed, and you might hear that next week with Vegas or Detroit, doesn't necessarily mean that that means that he's, you know, going to sign with that team. So I think everybody just needs to, you know, take a bit of a deep breath and realize that's probably going to be another week, 2 weeks before Barry Trotz ultimately makes the decision. And for Jets fans, hopefully he decides to come to Winnipeg.
Well, you know, and I see Francis's comment up on the screen saying that anything besides Barry Trotz is a major L. And I understand that perspective. And that's why I think it's also, I mean, look, Barry Trotz is an exceptional head coach. So that's why, more than anything, the Jets should be interested in his services. But I also think that given the way this past year has gone, given the way ticket sales have gone, given the way that season ticket renewals have gone, and just really all the negativity that has been swirling around this team, they need a good news story just for the shot in the arm that it would provide.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I agree with that.
You know, that they need a win.
Yeah,
and
fans need to get excited again, boys. Like, fans were not excited. In fact, they were demoralized at the end of the year, right? Like, the Jets mm-hmm. won those four games in a row at home, but you're right, Drew. I mean, this they need a win, but I think even more importantly, it's for the fans to get excited about, you know, the prospects of next year, knowing that now they've got one of the best coaches, if not the best coach, in their corner, and this Jets team is going to get back to being a perennial playoff team.
It will renew the fan base, you know, excitement wise. It will also, I believe, benefit the organization financially. I do believe that a hire of this nature, a hire of a guy like Barry Trotz, who the fans are clamoring for, will result in increased ticket sales, or anybody who's on the fence about a season ticket renewal might very well say, hey, look, True North is putting their money where their mouth is. They are, you know, getting an exceptional head coach, and it's going to cause a ripple effect of excitement. I go back to a book I was reading about the New England Patriots. The New England Patriots were, you know, a laughingstock of the NFL for so many years, you know, in the 80s, notwithstanding their one Super Bowl appearance that was more of a fluke than anything else.
Yeah, let's give a little bit of a shout out to Drew Bledsoe. Come here. Come on.
Well, there you go. Exactly. You know, they got Drew Bledsoe. They drafted him first overall. And I'm not saying the Jets are a laughingstock, so don't put words into my mouth. But then the New England Patriots went out and they hired Bill Parcells. Bill Parcells at the time was a Super Bowl winning head coach with with the New York Giants. His hiring caused a huge perception change of the organization, of the entire franchise. It created a level of excitement. It created the organization was viewed through a different lens as a result.
And then now, Bill Parcells morphed into Bill Belichick.
Well, I mean, there was some drama there, but we don't need to get into that. We can do that on our illegal
procedure. Same person, right?
No, different person. Illegal procedure football show, we'll do that on. But, you know, this is the – and I don't think it's not that dire for the Jets, but I think there's some parallels that, yes, a head coach hiring can change the fortunes and can do some can change the perception of an organization.
Look at the Islanders.
The Jets right now need, look at the Islanders.
Well, the Islanders are the best example. Like, every team is looking at this thinking Barry Trotz is going to give us an extra 5 to 10 wins mm-hmm. in the regular season and take us, you know, farther in the playoffs. Vegas, Kelly McCrimmon is thinking that, you know, in Detroit, you don't think Stevie Eiserman would love to have Barry Trotz as his head coach. Same thing with Chevy. And same thing with Chuck Fletcher in Philadelphia, right? So every one of these teams is, I think, Drew, hoping that you're going to get that same bump that the New England Patriots got, you know, 20, 25 years ago, whatever it was, when they hired Bill Parcells. So I think it's a good point. There aren't that many coaches that can have that type of massive impact on an organization. Barry Trotz is one of those guys. Not to say that there aren't other good coaches out there, but not many people have the same resume. Think about all those teams, you know, in Nashville, right? That had, you know, the David Lenguans, the Kimo Timonens, the Thomas Vokoun days, Dave. So, I mean, he had that Nashville team in the playoffs year after year. There were no superstars. You know, unless you want to consider Marek Zidlitsky a superstar, right? So, I mean,
Marek Zidlitsky called. He said he's not a superstar. Yeah.
No, so, I mean, Trotz's resume is basically unparalleled amongst any coach in the NHL right now. So that's why I think, even more so, that's why I think the Jets, you know, are going to do everything in their power to convince Trotz to become their next head coach.
You know, and the caveat I would put on it is past performance doesn't guarantee future results. So there's no, it's not necessarily, you know, a guarantee that he's going to come in and he's going to be successful. But based on his track record, Dave, quickly before we head to break, based on his track record, you'd have to say that the odds would be better rather than not that he would come in and succeed and help this Winnipeg Jets organization and this Winnipeg Jets team on the ice.
Yeah, I know. I know it doesn't necessarily predict future, but it's a pretty good idea. It's going to give you one. And like I said, for a guy who's able to turn around a horrible defensive team and make them a contender, you know, like I said, what team in the NHL is a horrible defensive team and could be a contender if they could actually clean it up and play a better round of hockey? And it's interesting. I mean, like I said, Barry Trotz is going to evaluate
New Jersey Devils.
Yeah. And Barry Trotz is going to look at the Jets roster and he's going to try and figure out, is this something I can do with this group of players? I mean, like I said, he's making a decision. This is a legacy decision for him because if Barry Trotz, the money's going to be relatively equal. Lifestyle, you know, you can say whatever you want about living in Winnipeg versus living in Vegas versus living in Dallas. I'm not going to compare them. It is what it is.
Yeah, you are going to EDC Vegas right after the show, Electronic Daisy Carnival.
Yeah, like I don't think Barry Trotz is going to be on the strip every night going to Hakkasan. Like, well, I think he's going to be, for the most part, he's going to be in his house after the game.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure, Drew, that you actually missed it. It was this weekend. But anywho, I really do think it's going to come down to this idea of a legacy and an opportunity. And he knows, look, if he can take the Jets over the hump and make them either build them back into being a contender or actually get them to the promised land. I mean, that would cement him as one of the greatest coaches of all time. I would suggest he already is. Yeah. But what I'm suggesting is when you can take different organizations, right? When you can win the cup with more than one organization, that just cements you as, you know, there's a lot of guys who are considered good head coaches, right? But, and even the ones who would, right. But even the ones who win with the same team year after year, like John Cooper, obviously, and what he's done in Tampa, it's phenomenal. But when you can go to a different organization and you can get that organization as well to that next level and into the Stanley Cup or to win the Stanley Cup, obviously it's easier said than done. If you can do something like that, that affirms your legacy. And I think there's probably an appeal to a guy who, like Barry, who we talked about, is an upper echelon, one of the greatest coaches of all time.
Local boy, done good. Trotz Watch 2022 will continue. We'll have it covered for you all over our social media platforms at Illegal Curve and our website, illegalcurve.com. Smash the like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel if you haven't already done so. We head to our first commercial break and come back with Jesse Pollock of Bar Down on the other side. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live Saturday morning on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you on this Saturday morning. We're pleased to welcome to the program from TSN's Bar Down our good friend Jesse Pollock. Not sure what happened to Ezzy just now, but he decided that he wants nothing to do with you, Jesse, apparently. I hope you don't take that personally. You know that Dave and I are your number one fans.
Am I that ugly? I was going to ask.
And maybe it has something to do with Ezzy's foot being asleep. There was breaking news during the commercial break. Ezzy alerted us that he's having a foot-related issue. His foot is asleep. Maybe that has knocked out his computer power. Who's to say? It's not that important. Ginsberg will be back or he won't be, and we'll proceed accordingly with this program. Jesse, good to see you, buddy. How are things?
Oh, they're great. I mean, you know what, fellas? First of all, it's great to see you guys. And I got to say, one of my favorite parts about coming on the Illegal Curve is just listening to the ads. They're just amazing. They're so creative. I love them. Everything's good. It's been an interesting spring. Like, the Jets obviously haven't been in the playoffs, so in a way it's been sad, but at the same time I've been kind of enjoying hockey a little differently this spring, and it hasn't been the worst. I don't know. No, it's just been different. It's been kind of fun chirping Leafs fans and all that stuff. So how have you guys been?
Hey, we're fine and dandy. I mean, yes, the Jets haven't been in the playoffs, but that doesn't mean that there's not a lot of Jets talk to talk about. As you well know, even being in Toronto, you're seeing everything that's going on with the Jets. You know, we were talking about Barry Trotz in the first 30 minutes of the program, because that's all basically anybody in Winnipeg is talking about. Obviously, we'll get into Scheifele a little bit later on as well. You know, what are your thoughts on Barry Trotz? Is he the answer for the Winnipeg Jets? Is he the must-have solution behind the bench for the Winnipeg Jets? And I guess, you know, what would your reaction be if it doesn't end up being Barry Trotz?
I think, yeah, he absolutely would be the answer. I just feel like we have a core that he could work really well with. Like, the talent is there. Barry Trotz is such a good coach. It's incredible that New York let him go. I can't even believe it. And you hear all these rumors, you know, could have to do with Barzal or whatever it is, but I do think he's the answer. And I think it would be a huge loss if the Jets didn't get Barry Trotz, because this, like, it makes too much sense for him to come here. I get it. Like, there are other options. Hey, Ez,
what's going on, cuz?
There's that furry face. We missed you.
I want to know what happened, because last time you sort of disappeared in the middle of a segment, it was because you dropped the lamp at Manuk's house. And I know you're not at Dave's house. You're at your own house, and there's nobody else at your house. So was it the computer? You didn't plug it in? What happened there that caused the shutdown? That's what I want to know.
You got it again, Mandel. It was the computer not being plugged in for the second time in the last four shows. That's a very Jesse knows, like, that's the first thing that they teach you in journalism school, to make sure that you have pencils and pens and that your laptop is plugged in. So that's my bad. I was just really excited to have Jesse on. That's what really happened.
You know, in addition to hiring Barry Trotz, to host this program, as we talked about at the beginning, we're also going to hire him to ensure that Ginsburg knows how to plug in his computer in time for the show starting on a weekly basis. You know, one of these days, as it's only been 15 years, you'll get a handle on that sort of thing. Hopefully. Go ahead, Jesse. We were talking about Jesse was giving us his answer about Barry Trotz and the fit in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I do think it'd be a huge loss if the Jets didn't get Trotz. This is our guy. He's got roots with Manitoba, obviously. He's won a cup. We have the core. You know, this team is probably as talented, more talented than a lot of teams that Trotz has had success with. So, yeah, we do need to get Barry Trotz. If we don't get him, it'll be a huge disappointment. But look, even if someone has roots to Winnipeg, the reality is that some people just don't want to go to Winnipeg if they see another option on the table. Like, Vegas is on the table. You know, wouldn't it be nice at Barry Trotz's stage of his life to go to Vegas, live in nice warm weather, and kind of inherit that core group of players and not have, you know, probably have some success there as well. So, you got to imagine that Chevy's just doing literally everything he can to get Trotz right now. And if we don't get Trotz, honestly, like, I could see the Jets hiring someone like Pete DeBoer, who's had success too. Not saying he's necessarily a great answer, but I mean, he, correct me if I'm wrong, he led the Sharks to the Stanley Cup, did he not?
Against the Penguins, he would have been the head coach behind the bench there, I believe, if you're not mistaken. You know, it's funny, Jesse, you can sort of see by your reaction that, you know, under most normal circumstances, a guy like Pete DeBoer with his track record of success would be, you know, a fine hire, but you can sort of see how your emotion level sort of dipped there in the response when you're thinking about alternatives to Barry Trotz. And I think that's where the fan base is at here in Winnipeg, you know, that everyone is, the fans particularly, want to see Barry Trotz get the job, and that's why it's even, I go back to when the Jets came back, remember, you know, Mark Chipman, if he had his way, he didn't really want to name the team the Winnipeg Jets. That's been sort of well documented.
No, it was going to be the Manitoba Polar Bears.
Right. But everybody was saying Jets, had to be Jets, had to be Jets, had to be Jets, that he resigned himself that it had to be the Jets in order to get.
Thank God that the team isn't called the Polar Bears.
Well, I mean, look, it would be on point, but it wouldn't be the same as the Jets. People wanted that. So you acquiesce a little bit.
Come on. Like,
well, you acquiesce a little bit to the fan base. Yeah. And this is sort of similar idea. If they can get Barry Trotz, you know, at whatever dollar figure, then, you know, that's what the fan base wants, no matter who else is there, is it?
Yeah, and I just wanted to, you know, kind of go back to what you said, Jesse, about Vegas. And, you know, you hear a lot of people saying that, you know, Vegas has the inside track because of Trotz's relationship with Kelly McCrimmon and the state tax and the fact that Vegas is a warm climate. Like, don't you think, though, that people are underestimating the appeal of one of the best coaches of all time coming back to his home province and having the opportunity to turn around a team that has come close but just hasn't gone over that hump. And we talked about this earlier, and I imagine that, you know, you've been thinking about this quite a bit, like what he did in Long Island. You know, John Tavares signs with Toronto. Everybody's thinking, okay, the Islanders are done. But then lo and behold, Lou Lamoriello brings in Barry Trotz, and, you know, the Islanders are a top four team 2 years in a row. Do you think people are underestimating that appeal of coming back to his home province, but more so having the opportunity to turn around a team that hasn't been very good defensively, and we know that that's his forte?
I think people definitely understand the appeal. Like, I think it's just so frustrating, and this is I can't stand the Golden Knights because there's also a lot of appeal to going to Vegas, and it really depends what Barry Trotz wants at this stage of his career. Does he want to take a team and turn it around and like try to find success in his home province and be this hero? Or would he rather go to Vegas and just be able to wear flip-flops everywhere and already have that team where he could, where he knows that he can compete for a Stanley Cup right away? So I think there's definitely appeal to both situations. It just really depends what Trotz, who's in like the twilight of his career, really wants. It depends what his family wants. I mean, who knows? Who knows? But there's definitely appeal in coming to Winnipeg, no doubt. And, you know, it's hard to get people to come to Winnipeg, but we have that advantage with Trotz because he is from Manitoba. So we got to hope that that's the side that that's the direction that he chooses to go in.
The family ties between Barry Trotz and Winnipeg are strong. The family ties here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show are also strong. Jesse Pollock, relative of many of us, joins us this Saturday morning to talk about the Winnipeg Jets.
Hey, I mentioned that anytime I can, that my grandmother was a Pollock. I never let that go. Come on.
That's what I'm saying there. That's the
best family
ties
right here.
Go ahead, Let's Dave. Go.
You know, Jesse, what do you think a hiring like Barry Trotz could do, though, in terms of calming the waters around the franchise, because there's so much uncertainty? A guy like Mark Scheifele, you know, there's questions as to whether he's played his last game in a Jets uniform. Well, maybe, you know, I mean, we know that Mark Scheifele likes offense. A defensive-minded coach like Barry Trotz may not be super appealing, but, you know, the idea that he could maybe help with that legacy and get back, you know, a little bit of what he's lost of late in terms of his cachet, at least here in the province. Do you think that would also go a long way? Because, I mean, again, there's a lot of uncertainty with this franchise. We talked about it before you came on. The idea that you don't know what's happening with Pierre-Luc Dubois long term, right? The fact that you don't know what's happening with Mark Scheifele. So someone like Trotz could come in theory, and at least calm those waters and get the franchise a little bit of stability where it needs it with the players.
Yeah, so it's a great question. And I think that there are like multiple ways of looking Trotz coming to Winnipeg in terms of Mark Scheifele. So you're hearing rumors that Trotz got out of New York because, you know, Matt Barzal didn't really have the best year in New York. And, you know, Barzal's an offensive-minded guy, and maybe they didn't mesh well together. So if Trotz comes into Winnipeg, is Mark Scheifele going to have the same concerns? Will the same thing happen with Scheifele in terms of will his offensive production dip, although his defensive play needs to get way, way better, and that's what we need out of Scheifele? And would that want Scheifele to leave, or would Scheifele embrace someone like Barry Trotz coming in and say, Barry says, look, Mark, I'm going to fix your game defensively because there are things that you need to fix, and you're going to become a better overall player. And we have the core in Winnipeg to really make a run at this thing. And it just depends how Mark wants to look at it. I think that it is a little deeper than that. I feel as though, you know, Mark's been in Winnipeg since the beginning of his career. And honestly, as much as I hate saying it, I kind of understand where Mark is coming from right now. This is a player who's been, for the most part, nothing but loyal to the Jets, and he doesn't really understand the direction that the team is going in. So no, I mean, of course he wants to explore his options. Like he wants to win a Stanley Cup. And if the Jets are not going to address issues that need to be addressed and in the offseason, then he's going to want out. But I think getting Barry Trotz, I would like to think it'd be a step towards the right direction for Mark wanting to stay. But I don't know. I don't know if someone like Trotz would fix that.
I thought you froze for a second there. Keep going. Sorry.
Personally, I don't know if it's too hot of a take. If the Jets traded Mark Scheifele and got good value for him and then re-signed Pierre-Luc Dubois long-term, I would be okay with that.
I tend to think, sorry, Jesse, but I tend to think that's probably a more likely scenario. I mean, you heard it was Darren Dreger was on, was it the Rod Peterson show, Dave, if I'm not mistaken, where he said that he didn't expect Scheifele to be back in the Jets uniform. And I know that, you know, Elliot Friedman came out after on one of the recent 32 Thoughts podcasts or on the 32 Thoughts between the intermissions on the Saturday broadcast and said that Scheifele didn't, you know, ask for a trade, you know, in those words. But I mean, not asking for a trade in those words and saying the things that you've said throughout the course of this offseason, I think are basically, you know, it doesn't mean that you don't want to trade. You might not necessarily write it out on a piece of paper and ask like a permission slip for your teacher to sign. But I think given his comments, given all the noise around the organization, and given the way the offseason ended, I still think it's very difficult for the Jets to bring back Mark Scheifele. And with only a couple years left on his deal, the time to trade him is now, as opposed to kicking this can down the road to see if it's salvageable, and then you find out it's not salvageable, and your and his value isn't what it once was worth.
So the tough thing with these trades, because I completely agree, as like I think the time to strike is now. The tough thing about these trades is that with when a player like Mark Scheifele is involved, as the saying goes, you never really feel like you're going to get the best return when you're giving up the best asset in the trade. Sure. So then the question becomes, what is fair value for Scheifele and who's a good trading partner? I think a team like the New York Rangers makes a lot of sense. You know, pretty solid defensive team. They've got a good goalie who can bail them out of situations. They've got solid defensemen. And I think I believe Ryan Strome is reaching the end of his contract. And I would imagine that the Rangers would rather trade a guy like would rather pay a guy like Mark Scheifele a bit more than $6 million a year than Strome, who's probably going to be seeking around the same value on his next deal. Rangers are in win now mode. They have some young assets that they would be able to give up. Like I think a guy like Braden Schneider would is an interesting piece. In a package that we'd have to get more than that, obviously, because Scheifele is a top end player and Schneider's pretty young. But I think they strike me as, and we, you know, we've done business with the Rangers before. I don't know. I think any team would really want a guy like Scheifele. Like LA would probably want a guy like Scheifele too. So, it's I think Chevy's in for an interesting offseason, and who knows? Like I feel like Scheifele might not even be the only guy that gets traded this offseason. I feel like a change is imminent with the Jets this offseason, and I'm really curious to see what else is going to happen. But we need help on the back end for sure, and I feel like Scheifele is obviously the main asset to help get that help.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jess. I don't think that, you know, it's just going to be, you know, a new head coach and a couple of new assistant coaches. I've said this on the show many times before, and I think it's Captain Obvious, but I think if you're trading Scheifele, which there's a good chance, you know, based on what Drew mentioned, the history this last year, that you'd want a number one defenseman in return. And obviously those trades are hard to make, right? Like the Ryan Johansson for Seth Jones trade, we don't see that every year. That's like once every 5 or 7 years.
Yeah.
So that's what I would like to see. So I agree with you. I think that, you know, it's more likely that you're going to see more than one trade, and it could involve a veteran defenseman, for example, being moved. But just getting away from the Jets, I was texting back and forth with you. We got to go back about a week, because if you follow Jesse on Instagram or Twitter, you know that Jesse was in Maple Leaf Square. So let's just, you know, we might get back into the Jets here, but you were putting out so much funny content at Maple Leaf Square, holding up the signs. You know, you were a statue there. Like, just go back. And how fun was it just to rub it into those Leafs fans who thought they were going to the second round?
Oh, it was the best. Honestly, I can't stand the Leafs. I can't stand the Leafs fans. Like, they're fun. Like, a lot of them are good sports, but my goodness, the things that these people were saying about their own players in the square. Like, I felt so bad for Justin Hall, just getting absolutely torched by, like, I'm not even going to explain the things that I heard people say. I mean, maybe you could say this about any fan base. I just think the like Leafs fans can be so damn toxic, and I just love seeing them. It was just great seeing them lose and just seeing all their fans be so upset after. Honestly, I like call me and pardon my language, an asshole for saying that, but screw it, like screw them. Leafs fans are the worst. They're delusional. Like so many of them are delusional. They don't. They don't support their team unconditionally at all. Like, you know, and I know like you'll probably find any Jets fan that does these things, but when I'm outside at a Winnipeg Jets whiteout party, like all the players, everyone's in good spirits. And I feel like that's just Jets fans in general. We're very supportive and caring about our team. And of course we get upset with things, but we love our players really. And I feel like the players really feel accepted here. If I'm a Maple Leafs player, I feel that to a degree, but I'm also feeling like, wow, these fans are going to turn on me in a hot second. So, yeah, like I don't feel bad about torching Leafs fans at all. Like, honestly, it's a very real feeling. I don't like the Leafs. I don't like their fans, and that organization needs an enemy, someone that's going to put them in their place. It's funny, like all of the content that we post, 75% of it is because so much of our fan base is from Toronto. It's just people just like saying how much they don't like me. And then the 25% is just like, man, like we love you. We need more of this. So I love you 25%.
It's about that 25%, Jesse. Who cares about the other 75%?
Basically the root of fan and fanatic, there's a connection there. So, you know, the personal safety wise, has anyone ever gotten a little too close for comfort?
No. And like, again, like, one thing I will say is a lot of Leafs fans are actually great. Like they're a lot of fun. Like we'll take pictures and joke around. Like it's a great time, but some of them take it too far. One fan was really annoying me in the square. This kid wearing a bucket hat just like wouldn't shut up. He kept chirping me about the Jets. And literally my only response to everyone was just come talk to me when you win a playoff series. Come talk to me. And guys, literally so many of the stuff that I did around the Leafs just panned out. Like I held the sign up that said I'm just here for the first round exit. They blew it, obviously. I tweeted right after game 5, the Lightning have the Leafs right where they want them. They end up blowing the series. Like everything just panned out. Like the Leafs losing in 7 games, them just not being able to close it out. You couldn't write it up any better. And everyone keeps chirping, where's the Jets? The Jets are golfing. I looked at them. Win a damn series. Do you know how pathetic it is? The Winnipeg Jets inherited maybe the worst roster and organization of all time. Like Atlanta literally gave us, honestly, the trashers, if I'm being honest here. What an awful organization we had. It took Chevy a long time to kind of, you know, start turning things around. We made the playoffs, within 3 years in our third season we made the playoffs?
Yeah, 2015 against the Anaheim. Yeah.
We didn't win a series, but we got to the playoffs. And then in 2018 is when we, like, you know, we've built that core, which the Leafs have built a pretty similar core to. I mean, maybe the Jets core was a little better if you look at the balance of our roster. And we were able to win some series. What the hell is wrong with the Leafs? Like, honestly, you can't even explain it at this point. It's ridiculous. Close it out. You know, everyone's talking with my good buddy Carlo Koliakovo about this. He's an absolute beauty. If you guys ever want to talk Leafs, you should look in again to Carlo on the pod. He's a gem. I was kind of just explaining to him. I won't touch too much on what he was saying because I think you can kind of see how Carlo is feeling on Twitter. There's no defending this. It's like you can either get it done or you can't. Like all these people defending them against the Lightning, like, oh, they ran into the good team. And I even said that, like, you know, if the Leafs play any other team in the first round, they're probably getting through. They face the back-to-back champions. But they had them. They had them, right? They had them.
And they outplayed them, right? They had them. Well, they were leading and they outplayed them.
That's what I was going to get to as well. Like, they were the better team. And because of that, there's no excuses. Get it done. I get it. One team had Vasilevsky. But Vasilevsky was not good the entire series. He was good when it counted. But that's the problem with the Leafs. They're not their best when it counts, and they can't get it done when it counts. And like,
as I said to our former colleague Richard, who of course works for the Leafs now, it was a lot easier to cheer against the Leafs before he worked for them. Let me tell you, on a personal note, I was like, you know, because I enjoy watching the Leafs lose like most other good red-blooded Canadians. But at the same time, you want to support your friend in his endeavors. So there was a real push and pull mentality going on there.
By the way, Rich isn't going to like that you mentioned his name on the show, Drew.
That's fine. It's on the website. It's online.
I'm joking.
Let me say something, because Rich, if you're listening, no, you know,
it's listen to us anymore. Don't worry.
I was gonna say
he hasn't listened to the show in 6 years.
It's okay. I was gonna say it's all good fun. And again, I think Toronto's done like a really great job of building that team. Like they have. That's one of the best rosters in the league. You can't You can't argue it, but come on, get it done. If it means a coaching change, if it means, honestly, it sounds bad. Maybe the direction could even be, and I don't know, maybe this won't do a lot, but I mean, Matthews is the cap is really like night in and night out. He's the leader of that team. If it reaches a point where you lose again in the first round and you can't move that Tavares playoffs, I don't know how much it would do. And I feel bad saying this because I actually love John Tavares. And I think he's, I don't know. We've seen it in the past with like LA and San Jose where like you kind of move the leadership group to in a different direction. I don't know, but I hope they don't do that at the same time because I really do like John Tavares. But like what else you need to do here? I mean, we talked about it. It's hard to imagine that this team isn't going to make a big splash. And I actually have talked about this with friends. There's a lot of options that the Leafs can go in. Could the Leafs consider, and I know it's somewhat of a lateral move. I think that Scheifele is the better player, but you know, maybe moving Nylander in a package for Scheifele and just hoping that like a bit of a shakeup is going to really enhance your top six. If you're Toronto, imagine William Nylander playing with Pierre-Luc Dubois and Kyle Connor, like on the wing. Can you imagine how good that line would be? That'd be one of the best lines in the league. Like incredible. So I don't know. I think the Leafs could, you know, go in a direction where they try to go for JT Miller. Everyone's talking about making that Kawhi move in Toronto. JT Miller is a hell of a player. And even though there's 1 year left on his deal, that could be a player that takes you to the next level. That guy competes every night. He's amazing. Or this sounds a little nuts. Talked about this with some friends. One of my friends suggested this. I mean, you could go for Letang, but you'd have to make the money work. But how about between the pipes? Do the Predators really, are they really going to need Soros long-term? Like, are the Predators in a position to compete right now? I would say that they're not really in a position to compete for Stanley Cup right now. If you can get the right assets, you hand your crease over to Askarov. I mean, Soros is there, should be there for the taking if the value's right. And if Toronto can't sign Campbell like to the long-term deal that he wants and to the number that he wants, Soros is being paid a very reasonable $5 million a year. Okay, I think he has 3 years left on his contract. That's a game-changing move. That's a guy that can help your franchise get to the next level. I'm not saying anything was Campbell's fault, but Campbell's good. Soros is great. This is a Vezina nominee we're talking about. The question is, would Nashville actually move him? And they would need unbelievable value if they were to do so. But I just don't see Nashville competing for a cup in the next couple of years. I think now is the time to get some more assets, start preparing for the future, especially if they lose Philip Forsberg. Something to consider.
You know, Jesse, I wanted to, the only other thing I wanted to mention with respect to the Leafs series, I thought one of the funniest videos was that kid who was in Maple Leaf Square wearing a Lightning uniform. And then as soon as the Lightning won, he takes it off. And I was like, nice self-preservation move, kid. But that was pretty good.
What about the guy, Dave, who said that Colin Blackwell is going to lead the Leafs in scoring last year? He obviously had a few bevies.
He must have.
More than a few, I would imagine. You know, Jesse, the other thing we have to talk about, though, the other series I want to talk to you about is that Battle of Alberta. Because it has been, that was some of the wildest hockey I've ever watched. And like, you know, the Battle of Alberta, the Smythe days, those are long since gone, but it feels like it's back. And Connor McDavid, I mean, just watching that guy, it's magic. I mean, it's funny because Kelly Rudy, I think, was saying it on the broadcast last night. Like, there's nobody better. Like, it's not even close. And he's right. Like, you watch the things that Connor McDavid, you see the abuse that Connor McDavid takes and he bounces off of it. Literally bounced off of it and went and scored a goal right after. So, I mean, just how much fun is that series to watch? And how exciting is Connor McDavid?
Oh, he's incredible. I was actually messaging with my friends yesterday, and I wouldn't know. You guys would probably have a better idea than me. But I just said to one of my buddies, like, I can't imagine Wayne Gretzky was much better than Connor McDavid, like what we're seeing now. Like, I don't even think it's possible that Gretzky was, like, that much better than what we're seeing from McDavid. I don't know. I wasn't really I wasn't old enough to witness.
Well, it's so different, right, Jess?
Like,
well, and also the league, but also the type of player like Wayne Gretzky, he would slow the game down. Everybody remembers his office behind the net, right? Like with McDavid, it's all speed. It's explosive speed, right? Like Gretzky never had that. So they're very different players, but you're right, Jesse, the impact and the type of skill that we're seeing from McDavid is right up there with Gretzky. Like by the time McDavid's career is over, he might go down as, you know, the second best or best player ever. Like it's not ridiculous to say that.
Yeah, I mean, it's like
you want to adjust the points for era. I mean, that's the big. I mean, the points will never match up just because of the difference in scoring levels. But what, you know, in terms of the actual on ice performance, is he's a magician. Sorry, Jesse, just go ahead.
No worries. And like, you know, you think of who is the best player for me. be in the league. And like McDavid is just, I think he's hands down better than Crosby at this point of his career. And it sucks because he doesn't have the cups, but it's such a tough argument to have. Because like, yeah, Connor's had Leon as well, but the Oilers have not had depth. They haven't had good goaltending. They have not had good defense for so long. You know, things that like when Gretzky won cups, obviously they had some incredible teams. When Crosby's winning those cups, those were some pretty deep Penguins teams as well, and they were able to get goaltending when it counted. I mean, look at what's going on with Edmonton. McDavid's going to do everything that he possibly can. I still think Calgary's going to win that series. But, I mean, at least it's nice to see some depth players stepping up. Zach Hyman has been great. Mm-hmm. Love Zach Hyman. Great to see him playing well. Leon's obviously been great, and he's playing through a bad injury. I believe he has a high ankle sprain, which are no fun. Evander Kane, former Winnipeg Jet, has obviously been great as well, but are they going to get the goaltending from Smith? I mean, Smith was better obviously yesterday, but you never know with that guy. You never know what's going on between the pipes of that team. I think Edmonton's defense is good, not great. It's definitely nothing special. And if they're going to win the series against Calgary, it's going to have to be on the, you know, it's going to have to be on the back of Connor McDavid, but I still think Calgary is a better team, and I think Calgary versus Colorado would just be a tremendous, tremendous series. But look out for those Blues. And I've always been a fan of the Blues, for the record. They're a damn deep team. They deserve the respect. A lot of my coworkers that I work with, they say how much they hate the Blues, how they're kind of frauds and all this stuff. I'm like, I don't really get it. Sorry. But there's some really interesting series going on right now, and I was kind of expecting more out of the Battle of Florida. Like, I think the Panthers are kind of frauds, if I'm being honest with you. We all had to pick like our frauds team on our own podcast, the Brandon podcast, and they were my team. And I still do think the Panthers are frauds. Like, I was expecting a better series
because they barely got past Washington, right?
Yeah, and like, I think, you know, it's gonna kind of, and Bobrovsky was still good last game, but I mean, where are Florida's best players right now? They're just going to sleep, and that's unacceptable in the playoffs. That's how teams lose.
Jesse Pollock from TSN's Bar Down. He's a good friend of the show. He's always a great guest on the program. Jesse, we'll let you get on with your long weekend. Thanks so much for joining us, buddy. Always appreciate your time and insight.
Fellas, are you kidding me? It's always a pleasure. It's great to see those lovely faces, and keep up the good stuff and keep up those great ads. They're the best.
Speaking of ads, let's go play some. Jesse, thanks, buddy. We'll be back with more Jets talk. You're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms.
Go.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest running comedy club, bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hi, Ez. A strange question for you. But why are you lying on the ground being crushed by a piano?
Well, Drew, I definitely tried to carry this baby grand piano down the stairs by myself, and somehow I failed miserably.
Right. I'm sorry. That was a silly question on my part. My apologies. Would you like me to call Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage to help you move the piano? They are the most experienced piano moving company in Winnipeg, after all.
Yes, please call Rolly's and hurry. This piano is very, very heavy.
Rolly's Transfer Moving and Storage offers stress-free residential moving services while taking great care of your personal belongings, including your piano. At Rolly's, no job is too big or too small. For more information, visit rollys.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
Hey, it's Aaron from Bernstein's Deli.
That's right, Ezzy. I'm the guy who makes all your sandwich dreams come true.
So when you think Illegal Curve, what comes to you?
How about juicy chicken schnitzel, grilled salami, fried onions, melted cheddar cheese, and honey mustard on toasted thick-cut city rye bread?
Man, that's like the holy grail of sandwiches.
And so it shall be known as the Illegal Curve Sandwich.
The Illegal Curve Sandwich. Try it today at Bernstein's Deli. Find us at Corridon and Lanark or online at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Hey! Hey, Drew.
Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go,
we have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal. Starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. We're live on our YouTube channel. We're live on all of our social media platforms. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Apparently it's snowing outside, guys. I'm in my basement with windowless, so I hope that's not the case, but hell of a May we've been having here. Isn't that the case?
It's been the worst May that I can remember in the 39 years that I've lived in this fair city. I went outside today and it was absolutely freezing. But as we know, May long weekend is always a crapshoot. It's always, you know, cold and rainy. It is supposed to be nice like later on in the weekend. But yeah, this has been pretty terrible.
It was 32 degrees in Ottawa last weekend when I was there. It was quite balmy.
We'll be up to the 20s. We're going to get up to 20s. So don't worry. Sunday's supposed to be nice. Monday.
Where are you going? Where's your travel Manitoba destination, David?
There's a couple.
I think I need to create an intro for this segment for next week. Some sort of thing where just put Dave's picture on a bunch of different Manitoba landmarks.
There's a good chance I'm going to be in Narcisse, Manitoba, going to look at the snakes, possibly go check out the snake dens at some point. I spend enough time with two snakes like you guys, so I don't really need to, but it's a little different experience. So if you haven't been to Narcisse, definitely worth checking out. McGilvery Falls, going to be really good probably right now, along Highway 44 in the Whiteshell. That's another good destination.
Well, why don't you go down 317, Dave? I'll be out in near Nopaming Provincial Park, near, you know, Bird River, Lake Lac Du Bonny. So
I would, but they're recommending you drive out that way right now based on how much water there is. And then
Ezzy just floods. His car just goes straight down as he's flooded.
The other option, third option.
We've got a pontoon boat for you, Dave.
Yeah, you'll just coast in there. Riding Mountain, always a good time in Riding Mountain. I know the roads aren't great there either, but lots of bears this time of year.
Hold on, Dave, are the roads anywhere good? Because I'm pretty sure that, like, I drove into a sinkhole yesterday driving down Grant, so I'm pretty sure the roads are our province is basically falling apart right now.
Yeah, so there's lots of places in Manitoba that I will be.
You see, what I would want to know, I mean, I appreciate how you go on your little sojourns on a weekly basis because you're doing your part to explore MB. What I would want to know is, do you stop at like various roadside diners as you go on these trips? Because that's really where I would be most interested in. I enjoy a local town's greasy spoon. That's not really your style. That's more, I think, me and Ginsburg's style. Nah. If you could incorporate that into your
trip. To stop at the side of the road and eat a whole tomato.
I definitely don't. I'm not a big foodie, as you guys know. Yeah, so food isn't really my motivating factor. I'll go for a milkshake. Town has a good milkshake. Dave M likes a good milkshake, so that's what I'll usually. That'll usually have a little bit of a sweet tooth. That'll get me. But no,
nothing compares to Dave's love for Salties, though. I mean, there's nothing. Salties basically owns Dave M's heart.
It is true. It is true. And like I said a couple weeks ago, I can't believe I phoned and she's like, and I hadn't talked to her. I mean, Salty's closes for the winter. So it had been like 6 months since I had last spoken. And she's like, is this for David? I was like, sure is. You know, you're home with Salty. So, I mean, it's good times, always good food, but that would be my stop, Drew, if you're asking about those kind of places to recommend. So if you're in the Interlake, definitely track out Salty's. It's always worth the trip.
Dave M's seal of approval. It's got his heart, as he said. Who has Mark Scheifele's heart, guys? And you know, maybe we're doing a little too much
of that Master Drew Mandel back in action.
Maybe it's a little too much of that Bachelor theme to this morning's program. But, you know, we talked about it briefly with Jesse. We talked about it when we were talking about Trot's Watch 2022. You know, the Mark Scheifele question, I think, is a huge one that still is going to play itself out over the course of this offseason. And I don't expect that it's going to play itself out sooner than, you know, the end of the season. I just don't see that being plausible, especially with, you know, potential destinations and teams still in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But that is next to Trotz, I think, the great unanswerable question. Because if Scheifele's not here for long, and, you know, if Darren Dreger said that, you know, Dreger, you know, is usually a pretty, you know, tuned in mouthpiece. Somebody, you know, when Dreger says something along those lines that he doesn't expect Scheifele to be a member of the Jets next season, that's coming from a relatively reputable source, be it on Scheifele's side or on the Jets side. So you can't go into next year without Mark Scheifele and without having Pierre-Luc Dubois signed to a long-term deal. It's not necessarily one or the other, but it certainly can't be both with the question mark attached to them.
Yeah, and I mean, there always is the possibility that Dubois signs a short-term deal, and there's always the possibility that Scheifele is a Jet next year. I'm not saying, Drew, that I think that that's going to happen, but it still is a possibility at this point. And I don't think that that would be advisable for the Jets, by the way, because we know that Dubois is only, what, 2 years away from UFA status? So I'm with you, Drew. I mean, I think, you know, True North and Jets management, with obviously Chevy leading the charge, they're going to try to lock up Dubois to an 8-year deal. I'm not as worried about that. I think, you know, you're going to have to pay Dubois. And I think every goal and every assist that he gets for Team Canada at the World Hockey Championship, I think, is only helping his cause. Look, I don't think that, you know, Dubois, you know, has gone from an $8 million a year player to a $10 million a year player. That's not what I'm saying. All I'm saying is that I think, you know, Dubois is only helping his cause by how well he's playing for Team Canada, right? So I agree with you, Drew. I mean, going back to what you said about Mark Scheifele, look, nothing has changed in the last, you know, week to 10 days. I mean, you have to ask the question basically, like, you know, what is going to give here? Like, what is going to happen that is going to prompt the Jets to trade Scheifele? And I agree. I don't think it's going to happen, you know, during the Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, you've got, what, 3 or 4 weeks left before the Stanley Cup is awarded. I just don't know, especially, you know, with the uncertainty surrounding who the head coach and the assistant coaches will be. I mean, that's something that we talked about. I mean, it might not be another, you know, it could be, sorry, I should say, another 2, 3, 4 weeks before the Jets have their entire coaching staff in place. I'm sure if, you know, Barry Trotz makes the decision, you know, that he wants to become the Jets' next head coach, then, you know, we're going to see things move a little bit quicker. But I think that speaks to your point about not expecting, you know, the Mark Scheifele situation to necessarily be resolved, you know, soon. It could happen in early to mid-June. It could happen, you know, late August, early September. Who really knows? But look at the track record of Chevy with his trades, right? Like, he usually either wins the trade or, you know, he gets equal value here. And, you know, right now with, you know, 8 teams still playing in the playoffs, one of those teams might want to acquire, you know, Mark Scheifele, you know, depending on what happens with, you know, the second round. So right now there's not anything really new that you can say, except for, you know, it looks like, you know, the Jets are going to be exploring trading Mark Scheifele. Look, nothing has happened, Dave, that would make you think that, you know, everything's good and, you know, Scheifele's all happy. The only thing, you know, that I mentioned a couple of weeks ago is, you know, maybe the Jets hiring Barry Trotz changes Mark Scheifele's decision. I don't necessarily know. I don't buy this that, you know, Trotz is more of a defensive minded coach, so Scheifele's not going to like that. And Barry Trotz is a winner. He won in Washington. He won in Long Island. They didn't win the cup. So that's all I'm saying. I don't know this for a fact, but Alex Ovechkin was a member of that team that won the Stanley Cup. So yes, well, you know, he might be a defensive-minded coach, but they won the Stanley Cup. So I don't, there is, I think, a certain segment of people that think that, you know, Mark Scheifele's out the door regardless if the Jets get Barry Trotz. I just don't know if that's the case.
Well, I think the question, Dave, and I want you to get in on this, is what's most important to Mark Scheifele? Is it winning or is it personal accolades? Because prior to this year, I would say that the answer, no question, is winning. After this season, mm-hmm. I'm not sure that it's not personal accolades at least equal to winning or close to equal to winning.
Yeah. I mean, when you use I as much as he did, that is a reasonable inference, Drew. And I think that it's something that the coaching staff, whatever they are going to look like, and the Jets brain trust and the management story is going to have to make that determining, you know, that determination, because you're going to have that conversation. And I suspect when they have, look, Kevin Shoveldayoff is not making a trade of Mark Scheifele before he's put his head coach in place. And I suspect the head coach will talk to Mark Scheifele. They'll get on either the same page or the page won't change. It won't turn and they'll make a decision. But you know what? I think that it's the leverage for the Jets lost a bit of leverage based on the way the exit meetings happened, because, you know, sure, maybe there'd been a little smoke, but there was never anything out there to the degree that it was. And of course, when you have a contract that looks like Mark Scheifele's, which any team is going to be falling all over themselves to get a guy who's only making $6 million and is putting up, you know, 70, 80 points in a season, could potentially do more. So I think you'd be, you know, like we talked about, Jesse mentioned the New York Rangers, how mad is, you know, they're going to lose Strome. How much would they love to have Mark Scheifele as their second line center there? So, I mean, I suspect, you know, there would be a list of teams that could, you know, try and get him out. Now, as Ezzy's often mentioned, one of the most important things is finding that value, and it's not going to be easy in a package. Generally, I mean, we've seen it. Packages usually aren't worth the one player that's going back. And, you know, the Jets really can't afford to not have something that's a home run. If you're getting, you don't want to get a bunch of deep prospects who could be good, because you already got a bunch of deep prospects who could be good. You need a home run first pairing, number one, right side defenseman. If you're going to go that route, or you're going to need some sort of, you know, like you were able to do with, I mean, again, you flip Pierre-Luc Dubois and Patrick Laine, center winger, but realistically, the Jets center depth, look, is Cole Perfetti ready to be that second line center?
Is he going to be a center at the NHL level? There's a lot of people who think he's going to be a winger.
Right. And that's ultimately the question, right? And look, Jack Roslovic was for years was supposed to be the Jets second line center, you know, taking over for Brian Little eventually. And he never had that opportunity because the Jets, of course, he played center at the American League level, but then transitioned the last 10 games or so with the Moose to wing, which obviously was a tell. Then obviously went up to the Jets and started, was on the wing, not as a center. 22 goals, not too bad. But point is, you know, you need to have that value. You can't afford not to. So I don't know what is. Look, and I think the other thing we have to factor in is, and we just ended Moose end of season media availabilities, and we did them on Tuesday. The Moose got knocked out on a Sunday, and we did them on.
Do I have to?
No. I just want to make a quick point. The point is that 2 days later, it was still. You could hear it. Like David Gustafson was still like bitter about getting eliminated. The players were still like, they talked about how they were basically like having like venting sessions for the last 48 hours because they felt like they had been, you know, they had.
Dave, were you the moderator?
I was, but they didn't feel like they had been able to achieve what they were wanting to achieve. And they were upset about it. My point is that even when Mark Scheifele spoke, there's still that latent anger about the way the season has gone, the disappointment. And I think when you have a bit of time to cool down, get some separation, go on a holiday, a vacation for a week or two, whatever it is, resume your training, maybe your mindset changes a little bit. You're not in it as much as you were during the frustration of the season, which all players have seemed to have expressed that frustration. And I just think like once you have had a little time, once you've seen the direction from the Jets coaching staff, what is going to be the Jets coaching staff, then you're able to kind of say, okay, I haven't asked for a trade. Let's pause. Can this be salvaged?
Right. And, you know, I was going to, you know, I think Jesse made a good point. I was going to, you know, go back to what he said about, you know, how he can understand, you know, why Scheifele might want to change of scenery. Think about it, boys, like 3 years in a row, Scheifele didn't finish the season healthy with his team, right? Go back to Calgary, the Matthew Tkachuk hit, right? And then Jake Evans suspended, and then obviously the injury to end this year, right? So I agree with you, Dave. Like, I mean, I think that, you know, again, you know, Scheifele's defensive shortcomings have been well documented in the media, not just here in Winnipeg and Manitoba, but everybody knows that, you know, Scheifele is a pretty poor defensive forward. Let's be honest. Let's call a spade here. That's his biggest weakness. Everybody knows he's a point per game player that's capable of putting up 80, 85 points a year. But, you know, you wonder, You know, if really that is the best thing for the Jets and for Scheifele to go to a team where there's maybe a little bit less pressure on him to be a better defensive player. And, you know, they can get, you know, a player in return that's going to make them a better overall team. And I agree, you know, Drew said this a couple of weeks back. I mean, it's really tough to duplicate, you know, 30, 35 goals, 80 to 85 points. Is Cole Perfetti going to replace some of that offense? But guys, it's not fair to expect a 20-year-old, even a guy like Perfetti, who has all the skill in the world to, you know, put up 85 points next year. I mean, I think he has the ability to put up a good season, but he can't replace Mark Scheifele. He's, you know, 8 years younger than him. So I agree with Dave. I think, you know, you're looking for, you know, either a top six center in return, or you're looking for a top pairing defenseman. This is not a situation where I think you're trading Mark Scheifele for a first round pick and a prospect.
No, because you're not rebuilding. I mean, that was what, you know, they talked about with regard to Connor Hellebuck. You know, Elliot Friedman said that in his remarks at the various times in the last month or so, where he said Connor Hellebuck's fine with being a member of the Winnipeg Jets and is happy as a member of the Winnipeg Jets as long as it's not a rebuilding situation. A first and a prospect is a rebuilding situation. The way the NHL is now, you know, a young defenseman and a young forward who might be on, who are still on their entry-level contracts, that's not necessarily a rebuild. We've seen those players, some of those players, come into the league and have a relatively significant impact at a relatively young age. There's not necessarily the 3, 4, 5 years of learning before they're at, you know, NHL level. That just doesn't exist anymore. A lot of these players are ready to contribute. So, you know, it's going to be, if a trade happens, I suspect it'll be someone who's still got a lot of team control under them, mm-hmm. but it's not going to be somebody who's not yet ready to step into the Jets lineup. It's not going to be a first round pick in this year's draft, because then that's just the tip of a domino of a lot of other moves that would signal a complete rebuild. And I don't believe that's where this team is at. You look at their offseason requirements. I mean, we know how Kevin Cheveldayoff operates in terms of the offseason at this point in time. He takes care of the low-hanging fruit. So he'll take care of some of the easier contracts as quickly as he can. So we saw Jonas Korpisalo sign yesterday in Columbus. If Eric Comrie is happy to stay as a member of the Winnipeg Jets, I would suspect that would be a contract we might see get done in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's a no-brainer to most people. Comrie played so well this year that, you know, he has earned, I think, you know, a 2 or 3 year deal.
I would, you know, Korpisalo, whose numbers were way worse than Comrie's this past year, albeit injury riddled, signed for $1.3 million a year. I mean, if you're Comrie, you're very happy.
Great value for Korpisalo, to be honest with you.
Say that again.
That's a great value for Korpisalo.
Like Korpisalo won that contract, you're saying?
Or you're saying he thinks the Blue Jackets won.
I think the team, I mean, Korpisalo to me is a great 1B goalie.
Yeah, but he was lousy. He's been pretty lousy the last couple of years. Look at his numbers. I think if you're Eric Comrie and you see that you know, Korpisalo.
Well, Columbus is also, I would argue, has been pretty lousy the last couple of years, right?
Fair enough. But Korpisalo's been sub 900 for the last two seasons, save percentage, and goals against was 3.3 last year and 4.15 this year. So if you're Comrie and you're seeing him sign.
That goals against average out of here, Drew, that's a team stat.
Fine, thank you. You're seeing Korpisalo sign for $1.3 million. If you're Comrie and you're about to hit, you're eligible for unrestricted free agency, which is of course a huge error that the Jets should never have made, and we've discussed on this program they should have played him more to keep his RFA rights. You know, if you're looking for a 2 year deal, and it wouldn't surprise me if he was to get a 2 year deal, it's probably at minimum at 1.3 and probably higher per season.
Yeah, I think so, it's at least 1.5 would be my
probably
guess.
I would agree with you, Dave. So that's, you know, certainly that's doubling what he made this past year. So that's more money off the Jets' salary cap situation. But I would expect that is something that could get done relatively soon from the Winnipeg Jets' perspective, because I'm not sure why they would necessarily go out elsewhere in the UFA market as it pertains to a goalie. And I don't think Mikael Burden is ready to step into that
role. No, he hasn't even played an NHL game yet. I think, you know, there, like you said, Drew, you kind of called it the low-hanging fruit. You know, no, you didn't kind of call it. You did call it that. And I agree with you, you know, we're not, that's not an insult to Comber. You're saying low-hanging fruit, meaning the ones that are easiest to get done, right? Yeah, and Dubois is obviously the high-hanging fruit, right? If you want to use that kind of tired metaphor, right? So, you know, the one that I think is going to be the most interesting, guys, and I think you kind of know who I'm going to mention here, is Paul Stastny, right? Because Paul Stastny just had an incredible year, and, you know, you wonder, like, how high are the Jets willing to go for Paul Stastny, knowing that, you know, they're going to have to break the bank for Pierre-Luc Dubois when they know that, you know, they've got some expiring contracts coming up. Like, would you give, you know, Paul Stastny 1 year, $4 million a year, if that will work to be kind of that kind of third line, second line center slash winger? That's going to be the one that's going to be really interesting to me, because, you know, I have heard that, you know, Stastny wants to come back for one more year. I think it was telling that the Jets didn't trade him before the trade deadline. So that's going to be the one that's going to be interesting to me. Cause I think, guys, there's going to be other teams that are going to be after Stastny, right? You remember what happened, you know, during his first tour, he signed with Vegas, right? So I think it's kind of 50-50 right now, whether Stastny comes back.
He's at the stage of his career, Dave, where he's probably on a series of 1 year deals. I mean, he's, you know, 36 years old and he had a great season. So yeah, I mean, do the Jets want to give him a raise? He made 3.75. I would, if
that's kind of why I said 4 million, like maybe it's more than that. I don't know, but I don't think Stastny's getting like a 4 year, you know, $20 million contract or anything like that.
I would agree with you there. He's not going to get more than, I say, a year at a time, but I don't know that, you know, the Jets want to pay him more, or can afford to pay him more than the 3.75 that they paid him.
Can you really replace, like, again, I mean, if you're going to trade Shifley and then lose Stastny, like, are you going to be able to find a Paul Stastny, Dave, in the UFA market? Like, those types of players are hard to find, especially considering how close he is with Blake Wheeler, right? They're really good friends. So that's all I'm saying. I don't think it's a slam dunk that Stastny's back, but I think the way he has played, don't you want to keep him just for his versatility and, you know, his ability to win faceoffs if he needs to, you know, contribute on the power play? Like, Stastny is that kind of jack of all trades player, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, we saw what he was able to do at 36 years of age, and he had one of his best offensive seasons. And the most important thing is he said what needed to be said out loud, and mm-hmm. he wasn't afraid to speak his mind. And I think exactly. And that's too often, you know, we hear the generic. He didn't. He spoke, and he didn't throw anyone under the bus. He didn't specify this person. He just said, we. And so, and I don't think he was speaking French, but the point is that I just think, like, he's definitely an interesting player, because you don't have the center organizationally, a center depth that you need. And so,
and I wonder, you can keep going. I wonder if you kind of keep him as that security blanket, if you end up trading Shifley for someone who isn't a center,
right?
Right. Because then you have that, like, why can't, in theory, Paul Stastny be your third line center next year?
Well, that's what I have been talking about for so long, is that, you know, this team's depth, again, if you kept Shifley, but if you actually went Shifley, Dubois, Stastny, Lowry, you've got incredible center depth. And that, to me, is what the strength of this team should be, is their center depth. And that, to me, would be a phenomenal one, and especially if you can put a coach like Barry Trotz in, who's going to create a system that would actually allow those guys to play to the best of their abilities within a framework that actually works. I mean, that to me is a team that can win, because look at how deep it is. And then you can bring guys like Gustafson and play him. I mean, even though he's played center on the Moose for the last few years, play him on the wing. He's responsible. Think about, like, Gustafson with Lowry. You know, I mean, they can maybe put the puck in the net. You know, you can drop Blake Wheeler down, play Blake Wheeler on that third line, move Ehlers up, and have Wheeler with, you know, Stastny on the third line and Morgan Barron, for example. You know, then you have some scoring and you have smart players on your third line. I mean, the Jets have the pieces. They just need to figure out what they're going to do. So that's it's a huge question mark, but I don't think this team is that far away from getting it all figured out. They just have to figure out, you know, who their coach is going to be, whether those pieces actually want to be here, and then if they can get it all pulling.
Whether they're going to trade their number one, number two center. I wanted to go back to what was mentioned earlier about Cole Perfetti. I don't think it's impossible, guys, that you see Perfetti up the middle next year. I'm not saying he's going to just be, you know, handed, you know, the second line center role, but, you know, if you bring back Paul Stastny, could you go down the middle like Dubois number one, Stastny in the two hole, Perfetti's maybe, you know, your number three center. Like, I just don't think it's – look, what have we heard about Perfetti? The fact that, you know, he's such a smart hockey player that basically makes something happen every time he's out on the ice, right, Dave? All I'm saying is I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Perfetti's going to be a winger for his entire NHL career. I think if the Jets do trade Scheifele, I think they're going to want to see, you know, Perfetti up the middle, you know, at certain points. That's all I'm going to say, right? So I do think that, you know, if you bring back Stastny, he might even be your number two center while you kind of give Perfetti a little bit of time to become the number two center. So maybe that means you play him on the wing a little bit. I don't know. The Jets have a lot of players, you know, that can play in different roles. Maybe, you know, with Andrew Kopp leaving, not so much as they used to. That's all I was going to say. Like, I think you shouldn't look at Chaz Lucius and Cole Perfetti are both natural centers that I think a lot of scouts were curious if they were going to be wingers at the NHL level. I just think that, you know, you should give it some time and not just necessarily write off Perfetti as a center. That's all I wanted to say.
More questions than answers as it pertains to the Winnipeg Jets offseason, and that continues. When those answers get resolved, we'll bring you all the latest news on all of our social media platforms at Illegal Curve, and of course, our website, illegalcurve.com. Let's take our final break. When we come back, Mike Commodore is supposed to join us. A little bit about the Battle of Alberta, which has been thoroughly entertaining, and of course, more Jets talk and your comments. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Bottom of hour number two. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew and Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg here with you as we are each and every Saturday morning. If you haven't already done so, smash the like button, subscribe to the YouTube channel, subscribe to the podcast, leave us some comments, leave us some feedback, all the interaction we appreciate and love to hear from you, our loyal audience that joins us each and every Saturday morning. And of course, after each and every Winnipeg Jets game next season, no more games for this season, next season.
Maybe we should be doing an ice post-game show, boys.
Maybe we should, but I don't think we're going to. They had a hell of a comeback last night after being down 4-1. They took an early 1-0 lead against Edmonton.
Then a beautiful goal by Mikey Milne, by the way.
Beautiful backhand, if I recall correctly.
Yep.
Down one, they were up 1-0. Eventually, down 4-1 after 40 minutes. Then staged a dramatic third period comeback to tie it up at 4. Before unfortunately falling in overtime by that 5-4 margin. Going to be a very entertaining series between these two powerhouses. You know, not a lot of defense going to be displayed. More offense, similar to the Battle of Alberta, which is nothing but fire wagon hockey.
Absolutely. The Oil Kings are absolutely stacked, right? Like Dylan Gunther, 9th overall pick, the Coyotes, Jake Neighbors, 1st overall pick, St. Louis Blues, Sebastian Cosa, 1st overall pick. He's their goaltender. 1st overall pick from the Detroit Red Wings. Like, this team is stacked. So, I mean, if the Ice are able to get past the Oil Kings, there's a good chance they're going to win the WHL championship. But like the Ice have basically been unbeatable in their home rink at the Ice Cave, right? But that Oil Kings team is really good. Not saying that the Ice can't beat them in a 7-game series, just saying that this is the best team that they've faced so far by far.
No question. The first two series were clearly just sort of amateur hour warm-ups, no disrespect, but the way that the Ice sort of toyed with those other teams and dispatched them without a lot of difficulty.
Yeah, but Drew, they still lost the game in each series. The Edmonton Oil Kings have still not lost a game in the playoffs. So they're 9-0 right now in playoffs. So they're feeling good about themselves and as you just said, with good reason. But it'll be another good game tonight. They go back in action, game two, Ice Cave, 7 p.m. So we had our photographer, Alex James, there taking pictures for us, as he always does. Jets, Moose, Ice, Alex is there, as is Colby Spence, who's back shooting for us. So we're lucky to have two great photographers who shoot for us all these great games.
So you should be following us on Instagram at Illegal Curve, of course. You see the pictures on the website, illegalcurve.com, but you should also be following us on Instagram for more up close and personal action from some of our great photographers doing yeoman's work for us here at Illegal Curve. You know, the Flames and the Oilers, Mike Commodore is set to join us in a couple minutes and we'll talk to him about the playoffs. I mean, you know, I look at the Jets games this year and I know it's not a fair comparison, but you watch the Flames and the Oilers and you watch the Hurricanes play and you watch the Leafs and the Lightning last series. it almost looks like, compared to some of the games the Jets were playing this year, that the Jets were playing in slow motion compared to those teams. Which is, you know, the Jets shouldn't be a slow team, and they're not a slow team. It just seemed like they were, you know, you watch how these other teams have been playing, and it's almost sped up. The quickness to the game is something to behold that I've really noticed watching these playoffs so far.
Yeah, well, and I mean, I think the best example was probably Tampa Bay Toronto in the first round, where it was just like back and forth constantly, goal after goal. Tampa Bay, Colorado, obviously, is one of the faster teams in the league as well. But you're right, Drew. I mean, sometimes, and also the competitiveness, right, or the compete level, as I know you guys hate to hear, right? Like, it's just like every guy's getting hit. Every guy's getting forechecked, right? There's not a lot of time and space out there. So, yeah, especially some of those Jets games, boys, towards the end of the regular season were a little bit tough to watch. But there's no doubt that we know this. It happens every year, guys. We'll ask Kami about it. But, like, every year the intensity ramps up in the playoffs. It's just going to happen when there's that much at stake.
What can be said about Connor McDavid that hasn't already been said? But, I mean, you know, just watching what he's doing out there.
First of all, sorry, Drew, before you start talking about McDavid, we have to talk about Keith Tkachuk not throwing his hat on the ice for Matthew Tkachuk's hat trick. Yeah. I put that on Twitter because it was probably it was such a dad moment. Like, he was like, you could see, I think his daughter was standing beside him, but someone said, throw your hat on. He goes, no, it's my favorite hat. And then either his wife or Brady said, Dad, throw the hat on. Or his wife said, you know, Keith, throw the hat on the ice. And he looked and he goes, no, it's my favorite hat. And he wouldn't do it. And, like, honestly, I was howling. I just thought to myself, funniest moment. Watching the Tkachuks have been great in general. But I got to tell you, I love Flame fans. I really do. I think Calgary is just such a fantastic market. And I always secretly hope for the Flames. Lanny McDonald, big fan. So I'm a big Calgary guy. I always like the I do like the Flames organization. So plus, I love those jerseys. I love it. I love the Battle of Alberta.
Daryl Sutter comments after, I was just texting Kami. He was having a little bit of trouble with the link, so I told him to maybe try a Google Chrome. So I think he's going to join us any second. But the Daryl Sutter sound bites, like, you know, talking about before game seven, talking about how it's a beautiful day and he saw geese in the morning, and, you know, talking about how after game one, when Haley Salvian asked him about the high scoring 9-6 game, he said, well, you guys said that the Flames Star series was boring. I told the boys they have to score 7 to 9 goals, right? So, I mean, just Daryl Sutter is just, it's audio gold every time.
Yeah. He certainly has been an entertaining series. And then some. Speaking of entertaining people, we're pleased to welcome to the program Mike Commodore. Mike, good morning. How are things?
I tell you what, I've felt better, fellas. I have felt better.
You were at the game last night?
I was at the game, and as per usual, whenever I go to a game, I'd say I probably, just before you guys even get started on game two, I would say I probably watched two shifts and had about 8 million beers. The only way I get to watch these games, I got to stay home. It's insane in there. It was a good time. Don't get me wrong. I'm not bitching.
And Kami, I bet you didn't pay for many of those drinks either, right?
I didn't pay for anything. Nothing. I actually tried, and it was nothing. It was fun. It was a good time. There was let me get my English together. Rhett Warner and I, we had to do a little work for the alumni last night, so we did visited a couple suites, and we had to talk to a couple rooms, lie to everybody, try to be funny. And then we ended up in a couple of suites, and it was really fun last night. Ended up that Shane O'Brien and Scott Upshaw were in town, so we saw them in the stands, waved them up. Jamie McLennan was in town, so he came up. Craig Button was there. I thank him again for trading for me. Every time I see Craig, I thank him because he got me out of Cincinnati / Babcock and got me to Calgary. So I thanked him again. He's like, seriously, I don't have to do that anymore. But I'm like, man, I like doing it. Anyways, and then we got really crushed. Really crushed.
Before we talk about the game, Mike, I don't know if you watched any of the Hurricanes-Rangers game last night, but Brendan Smith, defenseman, scored a shorthanded goal for the Hurricanes, becoming the first Hurricanes Whalers player to score becoming the first Hurricanes Whalers defenseman to score a shorthanded playoff goal since you did it back in 2006 against the Sabres. I don't know if you saw that or not.
Oh, I did. That's right. Yeah. No, I didn't see it, but I didn't see the goal. We missed it on TV. We had the TV going, but I did see that Brennan Smith scored. Brennan and I went to camp together his first year in Detroit. He's a good kid. And he stuck around. You know what? He's ended up sticking around for a long time. But yeah, that's right. One of my goals, I've only scored two playoff goals. They were both against Buffalo. And that's right. One of them was shorthanded. I tipped one in. It ended up really not meaning a whole lot. But yeah, no, good for him. It's been a long time coming. Was that in, was it in overtime? Or no?
I don't think it was in overtime. Just, but it was,
it wasn't in overtime.
Yeah.
Okay.
It was game one of the 06 conference finals against the Sabres. You got that shorthanded goal.
That's right. Yeah. Brett Hedekin. That's right. I remember. Well, I guess it was my first playoff goal, so I should remember it a little bit. And I only scored two. So, yeah, I do remember we were down. I think we were down 3-1 at home. Buffalo had such a good team. We were killing a penalty and we got the puck. Like, we kind of had control of it a little bit. It was late in the game, if I remember correctly. So I just said, Brett had the puck at the point, and I think I had already been like down behind their net. I mean, if they scored, it was like, who cares? This game's over anyways. And then I remember coming up around, kind of in front of the net, but around almost the top of the circles, and Hedekin shot the puck and it ended up just perfect. So I just tipped it, like kind of bounced it off the ice. It was actually I was pretty good at tipping pucks for no good reason because I was a defenseman. But so I tipped the puck, it hit the ice, and then it kind of shot up. And I remember it went right under. It actually was a pretty good goal. But I think it was that made it 3-2. We didn't tie it up and we lost the game. So it didn't really matter.
There you go. A little blast from the past. Now, moving to last night, I mean, you know, first of all, the first two games of this series have been just fantastic in terms of the entertainment value. You know,
I don't even care about the other series, Mike. This is the only one I really care about right now.
It's a good point. Yeah, it's a good point.
What happened last night from your perspective that gave the Oilers the edge besides Connor being Connor?
You know what? Connor McDavid's incredible. We were talking to a bunch of people and part of the thing with the alumni last night. And as far as game one goes, was it entertaining? I was sitting right here watching on TV. Was it entertaining? Yes, it was. Was when it ended up being 6-6, I'm like, what is going on in this hockey game? Nobody can save anything. Nobody can make a pass. The turnovers. Was it entertaining? Yes, it was. Was it like good hockey? No. On both sides, it was trash. And so last night I was like, man, I just hope it's for me anyways, personally. Just like, I just want to see a little bit better game. Goals are fine. I don't mind that, but just show me a little bit better. And it was. But I said last night, I was like, look, I'm like, after game one, and it was a trash game. So you don't like, if you're the Edmonton Oilers, just throw it in the garbage. Hey, we got to be way better. I think everybody knows it. We have to be way, way better. And pretty much other than Connor McDavid and every other facet of the game, we got to be better. For the Flames, they dominated at times in game one when the game started, they dominated. When it was 6-6, they dominated. In between there, they were trash. But you take the win. Hey, look, wasn't what we wanted exactly. Daryl would not have liked that game one, but let's play a little bit better. But I'll tell you what, I got to hand it to the Oilers because they played way better from what, let's keep in mind, I mean, there was a lot of socializing going on last night, but from what I saw, and from what guys were saying, I think the biggest discrepancy in the series, the biggest difference in it, or what the Flames should try and take advantage of, I think the Oilers' weakest part of their lineup is their decor. I just don't think the Flames forwards could take, I think they could take advantage of the Oilers' decor. That's what I would be trying to do if I was the head coach. I'd be trying to stress that point. And you know what, from what I saw, and like I said, there was a lot of socializing going on, but they played a lot better. I know Calgary got off to another good start last night, and the people in the building were like, oh, here we go. I mean, I was waiting to hear, like, we want 10 chance, but they kept it down. And then, you know what? You got to hand it to the Oilers. They have, although they haven't played great, they played obviously way better last night, and it was a massive win. And if I would have bet the game, I would have lost a lot of money because I would not have bet the Oilers. But they're hanging in there for sure.
You know, Colm, you just mentioned, you know, the Oilers decor, and obviously you were part of the, you mentioned Rhett Warner earlier, and you know, that 2004 decor with, you know, yourself and Rhett Warner and, you know, Robin Regeer, you know, among
Steve
others.
Monador, it was
The late Steve Jordan, Monador,
Jordan Leopold,
Denny Gauthier on that team as well.
He was on that team, but he was one of the first defensemen to go down. So he got hurt in like game 3 or 4 against Vancouver. The next guy out was Tony Lidman. He got hurt against Vancouver. Right. That was how me and Monador got in the lineup. Those two got hurt.
Well, and I mean, that decor was so deep. And then obviously you went on, you know, Carolina got to mention, you know, mentioned that earlier and won the cup. But what I wanted to ask you was about Daryl Sutter, because I think when the Flames brought back Daryl Sutter, a lot of people thought, you know, and I think it'd be interesting to get your perspective, because you played under Daryl Sutter, who is obviously, you know, one of the best coaches of all time. A lot of people thought, okay, like, you know, is Daryl Sutter really going to be the one to turn this around? And then you look at the Flames now, and even though the Oilers won game 2 last night, I mean, I think, and you might be biased, but I think most people are expecting, you know, the Flames to move on to the next round and possibly play the Colorado Avalanche, which would just be an incredible series. But just what are your thoughts on what Daryl Sutter has been able to do with the Flames, like 18 years after that incredible run in 2004?
Yeah, you know what? It is incredible. I played, I'm glad you brought it up, because I was with Rhett all night last night, and he was talking about it a little bit. So Rhett's a better guy to talk to than I am, so I'll regurgitate like some of his stories and some of his feelings, because I was only here for 18 regular season games and 20 in the playoffs, and Daryl liked me. But Rhett knows him. I was bugging him in front of a bunch of people. I'm like, I was calling Daryl Rhett's boyfriend. I mean, Daryl loved Rhett. But I would say, like, when he got hired, I was like, okay. And I like Daryl. Daryl was always good to me. He was hard on me. He was hard on everybody. That's one thing about Daryl, is it doesn't matter who you are, which I appreciate. There's lots of coaches that are hard on the number 5-6 defenseman in their third and fourth line. But when it comes to talking to the big boys, your 1-2 defenseman and your first couple lines, they don't say anything. There's plenty of those coaches. Babs, Bob Hartley. There's lots of those coaches that are hard on the guys that they can bully. Daryl, he's hard on everybody. It doesn't matter who you are. Johnny Gaudreau down to Michael Stone, let's call it. He doesn't care. But Rhett brought up a good point last night. Somebody asked him, like, how would Daryl be in the playoffs here after that? You know, because obviously he would have hated game 1, like any coach would have hated that, even though they won. And Daryl, and I didn't realize it, because when I was here, I was just happy to be here. I was just trying to keep my mouth shut and just don't do anything. Just get the puck out. And I wasn't really paying attention to a whole lot other than just trying to be a good teammate and keep it moving. But Rhett said that Daryl has been, when Daryl got hired, I was like, I don't know how the Johnny Gaudreaus of the world are gonna take this guy. I'm not sure. And then last year wasn't great or whatever. He's hired halfway through or whatever. But I'll tell you, coming into this year, and I'm not the only one. I'll be the only one that admits it. But the radio guys, not people, I've done a little bit of radio here. Coming into the year, I would say it would be, by and large, most Flames fans, but a lot of us that pay attention thought that the Calgary Flames are going to be like not making the playoffs for sure. I thought they were going to be one of the worst 5 teams in the league. I thought the lineup was awful. I thought the guys they brought in, I'm like, oh, I mean, what are we doing here? Not Coleman, but kind of, I'm like, the roster to me. I mean, if Daryl Sutter doesn't win the Jack Adams this year, it's a crime, because he has got these guys playing hard. He has them playing excellent. And Rhett brought up, to get to the point, Rhett brought up a good point last night when somebody asked him, like, what would Daryl be like after that game? And Rhett said, he was like, you know what? He goes, Daryl is all over during the regular season. Hey, wants show up, have some energy, have some fun, play hard within the system, and let's see how it goes. If you are out of line a little bit, I'm going to be all over you. But he's all over people on the regular season. And then once the playoffs get here, his kind of view is like, hey, we made it here. We got here. You know how to play. Let's have some fun. And he backs off a little bit, by and large. So that's what he would have done. That's what he might have to do after game 2. But I'll tell you what, I got to hand it. I didn't think the Oilers were going to win a game. I thought they would win maybe 1 game in this series. And I did not think it was going to be last night. I got to hand it to the Oilers. They are hanging in there. What was it, 2-0 and then 3-1, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, the building was rocking when it was 2-0. I'm like, oh my God, are they going to score 10 tonight? And then full credit to the Oilers. They played well, or they haven't played well. They're grinding it out.
Mike Commodore, our guest, Saturday morning, you're watching the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on YouTube. We're live on all of our social media platforms talking about the Flames and Oilers Battle of Alberta.
Well, I'm going to bring it here to Manitoba, Mike. I want to ask you a question about the Jets and the coaching situation. Sure. And what kind of impact the coach could have. I mean, right now, everybody's focused on Dauphin Manitoba's Barry Trotz and whether he'll come to Winnipeg. But just how big an impact can that have as a player? You know, there's all this uncertainty around Mark Scheifele. What kind of contract Pierre-Luc Dubois is going to sign long-term, even though Winnipeg has a decent core and a good, Vezina goaltender, there's that uncertainty. So what can a coach like Barry Trotz do to kind of cement that group and really get these guys in line?
Yeah. I mean, I've personally never met Barry Trotz. I don't know him. Obviously his coaching record speaks for itself and he's an excellent coach. And I've heard nothing but good things. I would say I'm guessing the guys that aren't signed yet and the guys that are thinking about it or whatever, you know, I would think that they'd like to know who the coach is before he starts signing contracts, right? I mean, you don't want to, let's say it was me, which it isn't obviously, but let's say it was me. I mean, before I sign that contract, I'd like to know the Winnipeg Jets aren't hiring Mike Babcock. You know what I mean? So I would say, but I've heard nothing but good things about Barry. I like how he coaches. He's done a good job in the island, like a great job, actually. He was very good there. I would say Lou, from knowing Lou a little bit, and I haven't seen Lou in forever, but Lou's not scared to switch it up. And when he thinks there needs to, it's nothing really against the coach. It's just time to switch it up. And I mean, Lou's come up and down off the bench and he does things a little differently. But yeah, I think that would be a great hire for the Jets. He gets guys playing on the same page. He gets guys playing defensively very, very well. And it seems like he gets a bunch of guys to buy in, no matter the skill level. So yeah, that'd be a good call for the Jets.
Let me ask you this, Mike. I mean, here in Winnipeg, I'm not expecting you to have insight specific to the Jets, but there was a lot of upheaval. There was a lot of upheaval about the room and the dressing room. Is it a good room? Are there factions in the room? Is the room splintered? You know, do you have any experience in your playing career of when you walk into a dressing room and it's, maybe compare and contrast, how easy it is to show up to work on a daily basis when you're going into a quote unquote good room versus a room that might be divided and how that translates to on ice play?
Yeah, I mean, it can be a massive thing. From my recollection anyways, if there was a fractured room, I wasn't paying attention on the teams that I played with. I would say the dressing rooms, by and large, they were great. Now, it can happen. I mean, not only the dressing room, but then, wives, family rooms. But we'll keep it within the dressing room here. Let me not get sidetracked.
Yeah,
it can make a massive, massive difference. I think kind of from what I've heard, I don't know, and it's nothing against these guys, but I heard one of the major reasons in Minnesota why Parisi and Suter were gone was because the room was a catastrophe. It was very clicky. It can make a major difference. If I'm playing for the Winnipeg Jets and I'm showing up to work, you're coming to work every day. I'm coming to skate. You're going into a place where you don't really talk to half the guys. Some of them don't want to be there. Maybe you don't want to be there. It can make a massive difference, and it has no choice but to spill over on the ice. So in my personal experience, I don't remember a room that I was a part of that was like bad. I mean, sure, there were moments where, everybody didn't get along, but I wouldn't say it was like totally broken down. But I could see that being, if you have that in your organization, that needs to change, because I would think it would be pretty much impossible to win anything with a bad locker room.
Commie, I wanted to ask you about Brady Tkachuk and the Tkachuk family, the Flames game, right? Because I absolutely love it. Like, Brady's having a great time. The Tkachuk family is there. And there's been like a certain amount of people. And obviously, Twitter is the land of the idiots.
Those guys are all losers. I know what you're about to say. They're all losers. Keep going.
Well, yeah. But I mean, like, so Matthew Tkachuk scores a hat trick. Both Tkachuks are, you know, they're tremendous hockey players. Brady just had a career year with the Senators, and obviously I don't have to tell you how good, you know, Matthew Tkachuk is. One of the Flames' best players. But, you know, Brady Tkachuk wearing the Senators, the Flames, you know, shirt and cheering his brother on, like, all of these people who even some people in the media think it's weird. Like, I have a completely different take. I think it's fantastic. Just shows you how proud of his brother he is. And he's having a good time. Like, do people actually think that, you know, Brady Tkachuk's loyalty isn't with the Ottawa Senators? Like, just because he's cheering the Flames on doesn't mean that he's not a proud member of the Senators. Like, what's your take on it? I just think all the negativity is ridiculous.
Those people bitching and complaining are losers and are just looking for something to bitch and complain about. It is literally not even June 1st yet. The Ottawa Senators missed the playoffs. Now is the time to relax and have a good time. Let your body heal. Have a few beers if you want. Do whatever. Brady Tkachuk's brother is in the playoffs. They're similar age. He'd like to come here and support his brother, have a few beers, and have a good time and enjoy the playoff games. There is nothing wrong with it. If it was going the other way, I would think Matthew would be doing the same thing when the Senators are in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Anybody who thinks like that, oh, he shouldn't be there, he's an Ottawa Senator, oh, look, he's doing the exact same thing, except he's related to Matthew, but he's doing the exact same thing that everybody else is doing in the province, basically. Now he's enjoying himself and he's supporting his family, he's supporting his brother, he's having a good time. It's the time of year to do it. He can work out a little bit in the morning if he wants to, or he doesn't have to do a thing. It doesn't, you got lots of time. Training camp doesn't start for months.
And Colby, I was also going to say, like, sorry to cut you off. I was also going to say, I'm sure you were thinking, like, a lot of people were thinking this too. Like, I love how the Tkachuk family is right in the middle. Like, it's, they could be in a box. They could easily be front row, or they could be in a luxury box, but they're right, you know, 15, 20 rows up, whatever it is, like, right in the thick of it. Brady's going up with a couple of beers in his back pocket. Like, I mean, how can you not love that? I agree with you. Like, people are just haters.
Yeah, people are just looking for shit to bitch about. I think it's great. Everybody's having a good time. I did, maybe you guys can confirm this. I heard it last night when I was at the game. Did Brady get a, somebody told me last night that he got a Budweiser deal.
He did. Yeah. Budweiser signed him.
See, I love that. I think that's great. That's awesome. I mean, he's enjoying himself. He's having a good time. He's not doing anything stupid. He's cheering on his brother and enjoying himself. So I think it's awesome.
I thought the only thing that was hilarious was that Keith wouldn't throw his hat on when Matthew got the hat trick, because he said it was his favorite hat.
That's right. I saw that on TV. I don't know Keith real well. I've met him a couple times. I'm like, seriously? I'm like, his favorite hat. I'm like, I don't know what was on it or whatever. It wasn't that nice of a hat, Keith.
Yeah, it must have been a pretty valuable hat. He doesn't throw it on after his son gets a hat trick.
It was a St. Louis blue. It's some bar in St. Louis. He said it was his favorite hat. So I thought, well,
I'm pretty sure the bar would send him another hat. I'm pretty sure he could get a replacement.
I'm sure he'd get one.
That's right. Mike Commodore, he played in the NHL. He was at yesterday's Flames-Oilers game. Mike, appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight into the Flames-Oilers battle of Alberta. We'll let you shake off the hangover and get back at it.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
We'll be getting in one tonight, Mike.
Yeah, I guess. What day is it today? Is it Saturday?
It's Saturday.
Long weekend?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay. Fellas, thanks a lot for having me. I appreciate it. Message me anytime.
Thanks, Mike. Take care.
All right, take it easy, guys.
There he goes, Mike Commodore, joining us on the program. Just for the record, he's a beauty. Josh Morrissey was also at the game last night.
Nice.
He wasn't wearing a Flames t-shirt, though. Just for the record, he was wearing – I saw it on –
Was he in the crowd?
Yeah, he was in the crowd. I saw it on Instagram. It's all on the gram, Dave. You got to be on the gram.
I'm only on the gram for IC.
You're on the gram for IC. Morrissey was at the game. He was wearing it looked like a white t-shirt, though, so not changing his allegiance.
Who cares?
What was the brand? Was it Under Armour? We need to know what the brand was.
To be honest with you, I didn't want to say this out loud, but I will. I'm pretty sure I heard that Josh Morrissey was wearing his new Illegal Curve t-shirt.
That must be it. I'm sure exactly. Well, speaking of Illegal Curve t-shirts, before we go, we got to give a shout-out to our old producer, Tim Debenham, just had a baby with his partner. Oh, congratulations to them both. I saw the photos on the gram, as it were, and he was holding his newborn wearing an Illegal Curve t-shirt. So he started.
Okay, I can one-up you here. I ran into Timmy
Yeah.
At Sobeys on Henderson Highway. I work downtown at the Sport Manitoba building, which is, you know, very close to Disraeli, you know, Henderson Highway. Ran into Timmy. I didn't realize that his significant other, I believe her name's Rachel.
It is.
Was expecting, and the boy's name is Oliver. He was only 2 days old. So I ran into Timmy. Like, what are the chances that you run into Tim at Sobeys on Henderson Highway? I don't even live in the neighborhood. Once in a while, I'll stop by and bug Dave M at work. But yeah, ran into Timmy. So I scooped you guys on that one. I knew that he had a boy named Oliver. But yeah, Timmy was our original producer.
Yeah.
Back in the TSN 1290 days. So great to see, you know, that he's, and he was a little guy too. He said he was about 5 pounds. So, you know, not as big as my boy Ruben, who was a bit of a heifer when he was born. But yeah, great to see Timmy. And I agree, Mazel Tov to the Tibby Debenham family.
There you go. Exactly right. Want to also give a shout out to Lauren and Seth. They're getting married this weekend. I'll be attending that. So wanted to wish them all the best on their upcoming nuptials tomorrow morning. That wraps it up for us on this Saturday morning. We'll let everyone get on with their
long weekend. How do we do a whole show and not talk about the Moose?
Hey, I gave you the opportunity. I had my finger on the button and you said no. So you'll have to save it for next week or the weeks to come as well.
Or the Moose wrap up show.
The Moose wrap up show, which is, of course,
some exciting guests to join.
There you go. Dave M will alert you to all of that news.
Looking forward to seeing Evan Polize's dog on the show.
Denver. His name is Denver.
The dog's name is Denver. Stay with us, of course, on Illegal Curve. You can follow us on all of our social media platforms.
Trot's at
Illegal Curve. If you haven't already done so, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave us some comments. Tell your friends. Tell your family. The best place to be every Saturday morning is the Illegal Curve YouTube channel. For Dave Manuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for joining us on this Saturday morning. Have a great long weekend, everyone. Be safe. Keep it locked to us for all your latest Winnipeg Jets news. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this broadcast from Illegal Curve Hockey. For more great Illegal Curve content, subscribe to the Illegal Curve YouTube channel, follow at Illegal Curve on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, and visit your online home for hockey in Winnipeg, illegalcurve.com.